Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Caitlin Patterson, Midwest Muscle, P4P Real Talk in the house. And this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at P4PMuscle.com. And now, let's talk. And, you know, last time I was trying to get in contact with my gym dad, and we just couldn't get a good connection, and try and try as I might, it just didn't happen. But this time, thankfully, I have him on the line. So without further ado, I know people are listening to the last show. So, Denny, can you hear
me? Okay.
Hey,
yes,
how
I can.
You doing, Denny?
I'm doing great.
This is my gym dad. Yes, sir. Denny, if you could just introduce yourself to the natural community and let them know what you're all about.
Well, my name is Dennis Shea. I'm 71 years old. I've been in the gym since I was in high school and rarely take a break from it. And always been natural throughout my entire gym life. And taught school for 35 years, retired from that, and took about a year off to study for the NSCA Certified Personal Trainer Cert, which people don't know the difference between certs. That's the top certification in personal training.
Mm-hmm. It's
very, very
different. It's like
very,
the Bentley or the Rolls
difficult.
Royce.
Yes, it is. And when I
Hello?
Got certified, then I started training and been doing that for the last, well, since 2004 is when I started.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a while ago.
And now
I didn't realize I'd
yes,
make a second
is.
Career out of it, but I did. You know?
Now, Denny, if you could, you know, because you've seen the enhanced side of things and you've seen the natural side of things and you decided to stay natural and you've also been teaching that, you know, because it's part of your whole existence. How do you basically mentor like you did with me where you stem people from going to that side? Because it's always a choice, you know. And
sure.
You know, you never – yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know as well as I do that a lot of those people that do use steroids, it's pretty hard to talk to them about not doing them, you know,
because mm-hmm.
they are addicted to the look they have and have a hard time looking at themselves when they're not juicing. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so to me, it's always been, and I, in a part of my career, I was in a hardcore bodybuilding powerlifting gym in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And then it was a little easier to get steroids. And like, there was a guy that would come every Thursday, and he'd be in the locker room, and whatever you wanted, you could buy. And
mm-hmm.
I just felt like, you know, and I had some of my ex-students that I taught school with that were in my weightlifting club. And when they got older and out of high school, they still continued to work out with me at this gym. And one day I went away for a vacation for about a month down to see my daughter, Florida, and came back and, you know, these guys were, you know, benching 50 more pounds than they were before I left and squatting 100 pounds more than what's going on here, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, then they're kind of looking down their nose at me like I'm a wimp because I can't keep up with them. And I just decided then and there that, you know, it's all phony. You know, it goes away
mm-hmm.
and you just stop using it. And I just also had another person I knew from high school, and he got very much into using steroids in the, like, that same era, late 70s, early 80s. And he had a stroke and ruined his life. I mean, he eventually died about 6 years later from complications of the stroke. So that convinced me once and for all that wasn't the way I wanted to go. And I just thought, I'll just do the best I can with what I got and try to eat the best I can and give my body premium food and see what I got. And I think I did pretty good for 71 and what I've done so far and still do.
Oh, I would wholeheartedly agree. Now, you've actually gone very much in depth with what you've been doing as far as diet, nutrition, health, fitness, cardio. You cover the gambit of how to basically address a person's needs, because you've basically been challenged by dealing with people who are dealing with personal challenges when they come to you from the get-go. Can you talk about some of the people you've had? Well, not some of the people as far as names, but just some of the circumstances and situations that people have had to deal with that have come to you.
Well, early on, because, you know, when I first started, I was about 63 when I certified. So I was already an older person and seemed to naturally attract older people. Felt more comfortable being with somebody close to their age. And because the NSCA is very research and educated, it oriented in how they approach training. There was a large part of the curriculum which was especially for special populations, people that had physical illnesses or conditions, or had, you know, orthopedic surgeries or various types of conditions, anything from, you know, strokes or Parkinson's or MS or you name it, it's come before me. There's a large list of different, some very unusual things. And a lot of it, of course, in order to deal with those people in a professional way, whatever their condition was, you really had to educate yourself about what their condition was and what was the best way to train them. For example, early on when I started training, I got a client that another trainer had, but she felt very uncomfortable training him because of his medical condition. And he had a very rare type of brain cancer, an inoperable tumor on his pituitary and hypothalamus.
Wow.
And that presented a lot of dangerous situations, train somebody with a problem like that. And he had had several surgeries by the time I started training him. These were not surgeries to remove the tumor, but to insert shunts into his brain so that it could drain the tumor, which was a type of tumor that produces an oily liquid, or it's called a lipid cystic tumor. And so the surgeries were to implant these shunts that would drain the fluid from those tumors, which were putting pressure on his pituitary and hypothalamus and were what was actually causing the symptoms he was having. And that fluid would then drain into his normal spinal fluid. and be resorbed by the body. And that was done by accessing that part of his brain by removing a portion of his skull to insert the shunts. And in one of those surgeries, he had a stroke. And so that left him with some neural deficits that, you know, the stroke was on his left side, so his right side was physically affected. So he had a lot of wander in his foot, in his hand, in his right hand. He didn't have a very good grip in his right hand, and a poor motor control on his right leg and foot. It left him with pretty poor speech control.
I can imagine.
And also some other deficits. In the course of time, he had eventually 9 surgeries because these tumors were lipid, which means they were produced a fatty, greasy, oily substance. And that substance would eventually block the shunt from draining properly. And then the resulting pressure back into his pituitary would make his symptoms go haywire. And so that's why he had these multiple surgeries, because they had to remove the shunts and put clean ones in. And one of the surgeries was to put a reservoir in there so that they wouldn't have to keep removing the fluid or accessing his brain to put in new shunts. The shunts would drain into a reservoir, and then the reservoir could be accessed by a port in his skull with a flexible needle, and then they could, so that oily fluid would go into a reservoir and then sucked out of the reservoir by a needle, a flexible needle in this port in his skull. So that experience of really training a person that was severely limited and had a very dangerous medical condition to deal with, and educating myself on that, I began to get more comfortable with other people that had other kinds of medical issues. Or surgeries.
Yeah.
And so it came to be more my specialty. It wasn't that I couldn't train younger people or people like yourself. It's just that I got a reputation for doing that and training older people, and that's how that became the majority of my clients.
Now, we're talking about personal training, because I think most people, especially on the natural side of the community, don't realize how in-depth personal training goes. And, you know, you do a lot of other things that deal with so much about a person's health and, you know, just getting them back to being what we would consider less than normal, you know, because they're not at par or even a little bit under subpar, trying to get to an average or basic normal day. So when people think about personal training, it's a lot more detailed than I think most are willing to understand or admit.
That's true, and that's, I think, one of the important things about understanding if you're going to hire a personal trainer is there's no licensure for personal trainers in the United States. So therefore, there's no standard of knowledge that everybody has to meet in order to be certified or licensed. So, I mean, if there were licensure, then there would be a standard like there is for doctors or for lawyers or for CPAs or anybody else that's a professional that's required to have a license to do their job, even though somebody like a physical therapist. They're licensed because, first of all, they have to have a master's degree in that field and then pass the licensure test, proves they have adequate knowledge to do the job. But in personal training, there's no such thing. So you got everything from the NSCA cert to these crackerjack certifications, which you can get in a few hours, you know. And I find that, you know, in the gym industry, as long as I've been in it, the majority of the trainers aren't really knowledgeable or well certified.
No.
So it's something that you, as a person that is thinking about having a trainer, you need to really research that a little bit about what kind of cert do they have, how much experience do they have, and what it is you're trying to do. Does the cert they have and the experience they have meet what you're trying to get? Whether it's somebody that has a physical condition that requires a lot more knowledgeable about what that condition is and how to train that person, to somebody like yourself who doesn't have a physical problem and wants to get better at being a natural bodybuilder. So,
and, you know,
so that's the important
deal
thing
a lot.
To know.
Yeah, very. But the thing that, you know, and it hurts, and I know it's been hurting you a lot longer than it's been hurting me, to watch someone just disregard a person's health in order to attain a look, and I think that's the best way to say it, the look of health or fitness, but really they're the furthest thing from it.
Yes, you know, we've talked about this many times, Galen, between you and I, about people we know who have been in shows, and we know what they're doing. It's not natural. And we know, we've known several individuals who have come close to actually dying because of the things they've done in using drugs to get to the point where they have to be in a non-drug tested show. We know how dangerous it is. I mean, you can die. I mean, people have died. Many people, famous people in the bodybuilding industry have died preparing for a show. And it's not, you don't have to worry about that when you're natural. You can die in a non-drug tested show even if you know what you're doing, because the chemicals you're dealing with are not healthy things to do in the way they're doing them to get ready for a show.
It's scary that people can be so comfortable. And, you know, we had a fella on the show last night, and we were talking about how the natural athletes look up to these individuals as if it's something they want to attain, but they know it's unattainable with the lifestyle they've chosen. So it's almost like we're being hypocritical of our own thinking by saying, even though this is my choice, I still, you know, basically follow around the very people that are killing themselves to look like how I want to feel naturally.
Yeah. And we both know it's not, we, as a natural, to your body look that you're not going to be able to achieve in the same way that people that are using chemical enhancements can, you know. You just can't do that naturally. I mean, if you go back in time, you know, because I'm 71 years old, I remember the pre-steroid era, which, of course, Arnold really is the person who is the face of the steroid era in bodybuilding. If you go back, say, into the 50s, like, say, a guy like Steve Reeves, who probably became famous from the Hercules movies back in the late 50s, early 60s, prior to the steroid era. And if you look at his body in that show, of course he was extremely well built.
Yes, he was.
At that time, a perfect specimen of a man. But did he look like Arnold looked? No, because he wasn't doing steroids. He was eating meat and drinking milk and, you know, eating quality food, you know. And, of course, the way they understood nutrition in those days wasn't quite the level of knowledge we have today about proper nutrition and diet. You know, that's the way they made you bigger was you ate a lot of steak, you drank a lot of milk, you know. You did have your veggies, but, you know, now that's how you got your protein, you know, is you ate a lot of red meat, you know. But if you look back at those movies today, he still had a great body, you know, but he didn't have to worry about, you know, whether he was going to die from, you know, kidney failure because he trashed his kidneys with the drugs he was doing to get ready for a show. And that included powerlifters in that era. People like John Grimmick, who was a monster powerlifter back in that era. And if you look at him and pictures of him in that era, you know, most of them were very smooth looking. You know, they didn't have you knew they were muscular. You knew they were a little bit vascular, although the power lifters, you know, still generally today don't care much about that. They just want to be strong. They don't really care much about how good they look. But you can see the difference clearly, you know, and I just thought, what was wrong with the way Steve Reeves looked? He looked great.
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing any drugs. So that's more the model I liked because I grew up in that era and there wasn't any steroids yet. So, you know, I went from that era to the steroid era. And of course, it was in that era that I really got more heavily into bodybuilding, powerlifting, because it was the gym I was at in Joliet was a combination of a hardcore bodybuilding, powerlifting gym. Time at that gym, probably one of the most famous powerlifters ever, Eddie Cohan, lifted there. Eddie has more world records in powerlifting and more weight classes than anybody ever. But, you know, there was no testing and, you know, he was doing plenty of steroids and, you know, his original record that he first broke or really shattered the record was at the weight of 175. And he just gradually kept moving up in weight classes. But I don't think he ever got much above 240, even at his biggest, you know. But he came around in an era when it was available, was easily available, and nobody thought as much about the side effects of it then as we do now. As certain ones of us do now, anyway. So,
and
well, that's where I
you've
came
been
from that way.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot with, you know, whole foods, grains, basically making sure your body stays at optimum levels at all times, without being one of those. Strict diet, you know, almost like when you talk about competitive eating, you're actually better at that
than most competitors I know, because basically you're just doing it for your personal health.
Yes. Yeah, I read a book about, oh, gee, 15 years ago now, whenever it first came out, a book called The Zone by a guy named Barry Sears, who was a scientist that specialized in chemical nutrients. Although he did other things, mm-hmm. like he was one of the people that helped pioneer the AZT, which was the first drug for AIDS. So he was quite a versatile, like, biochemist. And Stanford University contacted him, and what they were looking for was his help in trying to set up a diet plan for the Stanford athletes, would enable them to keep muscle mass through their training year, and to keep their fat levels at optimum levels. And so that mm-hmm. was his challenge. And then trying to meet that challenge, he got more into studying the nutritional needs of humans. And
mm-hmm.
he helped pioneer a lot of the research that was done. I mean, we all already knew about things like, you know, humans need certain vitamins and certain minerals are essential to keeping them alive.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know about things like phytonutrients and flavonoids and all those micronutrients that are in food. So he did a lot of the pioneering work in finding out not only what things were in certain foods, but what foods did humans really need, and what nutrients in those foods did we essentially need. And
mm-hmm.
he came up with this book called The Zone. The first book is, he's had a number of books since then. The first book is very scientific and research-based. So if you enjoy reading the science and the actual research, then, and you're a science kind of guy, that's the book that appeals to me the most. When he came out with successive books, a lot of people that heard about the book or read the book said, well, I don't want to know all the science mumbo jumbo. Just tell me what to eat. Give me a diet plan. So basically his successive books were more like The Zone for Dummies, you know. Here's a meal plan. Here's what to eat. He always did give a little brief overlay of what his philosophy was and what humans need and what foods have those nutrients. And but I like the original book, you know. And it's been updated because there has been advancements as time has gone on.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the principles because they're based on you. So there's a system of calculating what are your macronutrient needs per meal. And the macronutrients, of course, are protein, carbohydrates, and fats. Those are the three
mm-hmm.
macronutrients that humans need to survive. We can live for a period of time without any two of the three. But if you eliminate one of those three permanently, any one of those permanently, you'll die because we need all
yes.
three. But our body can adapt for a period of time without two of the three at any period of time. It has a way,
mm-hmm.
Of course, we have stored vitamins and minerals. We store fat. Our body has a system for preventing or protecting us in the hard times. But, of course, where we live now and the time we live in, most of us haven't had those hard times. I never starved.
Yeah.
I don't think you ever starved, not really starved.
No.
yet we have a primitive body, you know. Think about how old this body is in terms of how long they spend humans here. And what amount of that time that humans have been alive for more than a million years have we been able to eat whatever we want whenever we want to? Not very long. Say basically the last 120 years in America and some of the westernized countries. I mean, we know there's still countries in the world that can't eat whatever they want whenever they want it, even today. But we live in a place where we can get optimum nutrition.
And we do.
And we know now the science of what do humans need. So his system was, you figure out what are your macronutrient requirements per day or per meal are, how much protein, how much carbs, how much fat. And it's more like a division, like you could say some of it could be a 60-20-20 or, you know, a 30-30, you know, division like that, with the most being protein and then, you know, 30% carbs, 30% fat. There's various ways you can do it depending on how much you have to lose or want to lose. But still getting the basic macronutrients in premium quality or quantity.
Yes.
Quality and quantity. So instead of counting calories, you portion control your amount per meal, say for protein. You would use your hand as your portion controller. So if you're going to eat a piece of steak, let's say. And he knew from his research that in the time that we start to eat our food, and time it takes to get to the part of the small intestines where the nutrients are actually absorbed into the bloodstream, there's a brief amount of time when that takes place. The system keeps on moving. Once you start the system going, which is called a trigger system, like first we see food, that's one of the triggers that gets the system going. And then we smell the food. That's another trigger to get another part of the system going. We taste the food. So all of these were actually mechanical triggers to set the digestive system in place so that when that food arrived in basically the first 3 feet of the small intestine where the nutrition is actually absorbed, that the body was ready to absorb that. And I have a lot of people, I ask them, well, what did you have for breakfast this morning? Well, I didn't have time, so I threw down my vitamins and a cup of coffee and came to the gym. Well, how much nutrients do you think they got out of those vitamin triggers?
Yes.
Now, you may get a little bit, but most of them are going to go in the toilet because your system wasn't ready for the absorption of nutrients because you bypassed the food triggers. Didn't see food in that pill, didn't smell food in that pill, didn't taste food in that pill. So your chances of actually getting any nutrients out of that are pretty slim. So also in his system, he makes it easy for you to decide what you're going to eat in your macronutrients. So say in that steak, that was going to be your, he divides each of the three macronutrients into preferred, moderated, and avoided choices. So if you're going to eat a piece of steak, now that can be a preferred choice. You know, a lot of vegans might say that's not a preferred choice, but sorry to say that the amino acid profile of a piece of red meat, a lean red piece of meat, is pretty hard to beat. You got everything in there. It's almost a perfect protein source. The problem most people have is the quantity they eat at one meal. In his research, he found that in the time we have to actually absorb the nutrients, we can only absorb about 4 to 6 ounces of a steak's nutrients in the time we have in the digestive process. So, yeah, you can eat that 32-ounce porterhouse steak, but most of it's going down the toilet because you're only going to have time to absorb 4 to 6 ounces of that protein in that meal setting. So, and that's a consideration you want in all of your other macronutrients. So, you know, in your portion control, if you had a piece of steak that was 4 to 6 ounces, that would basically fit easily in the palm of your hand. Because a 4 to 6 ounce steak would be maybe, what, 2.5 inches in diameter and maybe 1.5, 2 inches tall. So most guys would say, well, that's a snack. Well,
that's a joke.
But that's all you're going to be able to absorb anyway. So why waste your money? I mean, if you're going to buy that 32-ounce porterhouse, divide it up. Now you can make several meals out of it, you know. So in carbs, you know, and for a big period of time, carbs were demonized, you know, as being evil things. But we need carbs. Problem with American diet is the carbs they choose are terrible. Refined carbs, simple carbs, a lot of sugar, a lot of refined processed chemicals that are in there.
Just crap.
There's nothing wrong with real fruits and vegetables. Those carbs are good. That's where you should get your nutrients. And even saturated fats got demonized for a long time, and now they're coming back a little bit the other way. And part of the reason why saturated fats were demonized was they believed that was the cause of the rise after World War II of heart attacks in America and in some of the other westernized countries. And a little-known research study, which kind of got buried away because it kind of countered the whole idea that saturated fats were evil and bad, was that a research study had showed that the fats that, and why this rise took place after World War II, was that during the war years, the military got most of the dairy products. So butter, cream, that went to the military first. So in order to appease the American population, which had gotten used to eat butter, and now they were rationed on how much butter they could actually buy in the store, we haven't seen rationing in a food store. I don't think anybody in our lifetime has had rationed food. So they developed this product called margarine,
which
they created a hydrogenated fat by injecting hydrogen gas into vegetable oil. And it produced a creamy, spreadable substance that when a food dye was added to it, made it look like butter, taste like butter, spread like butter, but it wasn't butter. And so the Americans started eating more and more of these margarines and other trans fats that were used in cooking because it was cheaper than butter or other natural oils. Because they were saturated fats, somehow they believed this was superior to that, because it wasn't saturated animal fat. But what they eventually found out, and this was only a couple of years ago when somebody discovered this research study that said the problem was trans fats, which our body, our ancient body, had no ability to deal with how to handle these types of fats. They were something that was not in our genetic makeup in a million years of development. We just ate saturated fat. We ate animals. So our body didn't have a system to handle these trans fats. And what happened was that's what was causing this high rate of heart attacks and heart problems in America, was our body was collecting or storing these trans fats in the plaque that built up in our artery walls. And so now they've kind of turned it around because our body does know how to handle saturated fats. Our body is made to deal with saturated fats. That's why we have a liver. That's what does process of saturated fats. Because fats are fats, whether they're good fats or bad fats, it's still fat, and you have to moderate your intake of it based on your personal requirements for fat. And then, again, he always had a preferred, moderated, and avoided choice. So, you know, in fats, he mostly sticks with the preferred choices, although you could moderate your intake of saturated fat. Your avoided ones would be all trans fats or anything that had trans fats in it. And even in fruits and vegetables, there are certain fruits and vegetables that he would put on the moderated list, but never on the avoided list. You can eat any fruit or vegetable, but some you would moderate your intake of in favor of preferred choices. And that would be based on if you were having sugar problems, like if you were pre-diabetic or diabetic, you would want to restrict your simple sugar intake. So you would avoid fruits like, or juices especially, like orange juice, because it's pure glucose. The sugars in an orange are pure glucose. They don't have to be converted into anything, they already are. So in his choices for fruits and vegetables, the sugars that are in there are more complex sugars that have to be broken down into glucose. And all of our carbs are eventually broken down into glucose because that's our fastest and most immediate energy system. We need glucose. But we can convert complex sugars into glucose. Our body knows how to do that. It's got a chemical system to do that. So just by learning what fruits and vegetables you should most of the time, in other words, he's not saying don't ever eat an orange. But if you're going to eat an orange, eat an orange. Don't have the orange juice. There's only a few juices that he would say were a moderated choice. That would be something like a tart cherry juice, like Montmorency cherry juice, or 100% pure cranberry juice, which has very little sugar, and it's a complex sugar. And the benefit of that, too, is that because these are more complex sugars, your insulin has something to work on because it has to break that complex sugar down into a simple sugar. When you eat something like potato chips or drink a glass of orange juice, there's nothing there for your insulin to work on. It's already a simple sugar. So your insulin spikes and you go hyperglycemic, waiting around for something to work on, nothing, and then finally it drops and then you go hypoglycemic, low blood sugar, and then you feel drowsy and sleepy. And a lot of times when people eat this way, about an hour after they eat, they get sleepy because they're hypoglycemic. Mm-hmm. So once you learn the system and learn how to portion control whatever you're eating by using your hand, different parts of your hand for your amount, it's a very simple system to use. And the other thing I like about it so much is you learn what do humans need, what should I eat in a premium way. Because once you convince your brain you're giving it premium food all the time and you have fat to burn, it'll start burning it.
Mm.
And you'll burn it fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a little while for your brain to be convinced you're not going to starve yourself, but you're going to give it premium food. You know, would you buy a Ferrari and use just regular unleaded gas in it? No.
Right.
Because it's not going to run like a Ferrari. So,
no.
You know, I want, even though I think my body's a Ferrari, and that's the way I treat it nutritionally. And I think it's a great dividend. What I can do at this age and the energy I have is what I eat and what I do. You know? So I treat my body right, and it's treating me pretty good.
It's loving you, you know.
Yeah.
And it's sad when you see the opposite side, where people are basically disregarding their health, you know. And I said it's something I've noticed, and I made mention of it a couple of times on this show, where it's like Americans aren't taught to be healthy. They're taught to get back to work. Everything's about work. You know, get back to work. Take a pill, go back to work. Have a headache, take this, get back to work. It's never about getting back to good health. And even that's being taken out of the school systems.
Well, I mean, look how kids are brainwashed from early on. What do you see them advertising food-wise on kids' shows? That's all this
cereal.
Junk cereal,
McDonald's,
that you see.
Burger King.
Look at the ingredients on there, and you'll see when there's names you can't pronounce on there, you know, there's something wrong. There's natural cereals that are great to eat, and don't contain all those things. But they've brainwashed generations of kids into thinking, and because sugar is an addictive, we all
Very.
Know that, kids get hooked at an early age and to simple carbohydrates. And it's, you can tell by just how many young people are overweight. Just seeing the difference between when I started teaching in 1968 and how many kids in the classroom were obese. And when I retired in 2003, the amount of overweight kids was almost half the class.
Yes.
So.
Or more.
I saw a big difference in the 35 years I taught between what was happening in 68 and how much worse it got by 2003. It's very hard to change, but you just have to educate yourself and not be brainwashed by all these television ads that say, oh, this is great, and this is great for you. You know, do your homework, and you'll find out what's really good for you. And once you get used to eating that way, there's nothing wrong with real food. It tastes pretty good. It's not only good for you, but it tastes pretty good, you know?
Yes.
You know what?
And, you know, one of the other things I'd like to cover before the show is over is your ability to just blend in to where you can get people to make changes that they really didn't see they needed to change. And I'll use myself for an example. You know, when I used to teach the cardio classes, and you used to always tell me, because I thought, hey, I'm doing cardio, so I'm being healthy, and you know, and I'm going to get bigger. And you were almost laughing, you know, and it used to tickle me how you used to smile and try to explain to me how I was going to have to do less if I wanted to get bigger, even though I thought, you know, I'm doing more, so I'm going to get a better result from it. But that was the furthest thing from what I was doing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, you know, that's very, you're not alone in that. That was a very, very common thing, you know, to overtrain.
Mm-hmm.
Even though genetically you're very gifted and you're a natural mesomorph. So for somebody like me, that's a natural ectomorph, you know, I'm naturally thin. So I was always a hard gainer, you know. And that's when I found out in the zone principles, I wish I would have started doing it sooner in my lifting hobby. Like back when I was at that place, I wish I would have eaten that way, but the book hadn't come out yet. So, but once it had, I did. And, you know, sometimes less is more. And especially when you're trying to gain muscle, you know, when you do too much cardio, you tend to burn some muscle off. And so defeating your purpose, you know. That's not to say there's not a place for that. You should, you know, do some cardio work. Everybody should, but just like, you know, is running a marathon about health? Do you have to run 26 miles to be healthy? I don't think
right.
so.
No.
In some cases, it's really unhealthy to do that. There's been a lot of research in how many elite distance athletes, whether it's triathlons or marathons, have an inordinate amount of cardiac issues in that population compared to the general population. So, you know, it's just could say, like the kind of bodybuilding that we're talking about when we're talking about the steroid users. Is that really about health? I mean, they may have gone into it initially to be healthy, but that's not about health. I mean, you don't have to do a bodybuilding show to be healthy. But if you are, and that's what you want to do, you'll see that it works very well for that. You know, so you can do it naturally and have a great result. And I think you're a prime example of that. You know, what I suggested, you took to heart. You were very coachable. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are in gyms that if I say, would you consider using this technique or whatever advice I gave them, and they look at me up and down like, what's this little 165-pound shrimp telling me what to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day when one of them, like 240-pound steroid user, and I was just trying to give him a tip on better technique in his range of motion and the speed at which he was doing the repetition. And, you know, he gave me that look up and down, like, what are you telling me that for? And I kind of got that feeling, and I said to him, I said, well, you know, there's no brains down here. And I pointed to my body, you know, meaning, just because I don't look like you doesn't mean I don't have the knowledge.
Exactly.
So that was my point to him. I don't know if that went over his head. It probably did, but
probably did.
I had to say it anyway because I always remember Mark Spitz, the guy that before Phelps
the swimmer
broke all the Olympic swimming records. His swimming coach, through most of his career, didn't know how to swim.
Are you serious?
Really? No. So just because you don't look the part doesn't mean you don't have the knowledge of that. You know, there's a lot of men gynecologists, but they never had a baby. But they're gynecologists. So
exactly.
Having knowledge is the key to a lot of things, you know. And you took it to heart. I mean, because I had, you know, I coached kids in junior high, in high school, in college. You know, I've had experience with every age level, from junior high kids to 93-year-olds, which is my oldest client now. So,
wow.
You know, if you really are passionate about what you do and want the knowledge to do the best job you can for your clients. And for my gym friends, you know, probably it was because I was a teacher, but I like to mentor people. And
well, it works, I'll tell you that.
People like yourself that took it to heart and appreciated the mentorship I gave them, which you gave back to me more than I gave you. I have to tell you that. You may not think so, but you did.
Well, I'll be honest, Denny, you know, and I was kind of ashamed for a while because I saw so many people taking your information and basically just keeping it to themselves. And that hurt me because, you know, I know how giving you are. And, you know, these people were taking credit for your work. And there's no way I could do that when I could see, you know, well, like I said, with all the cardio I was doing, and granted, I was eating to try and match the cardio I was doing, but my body was under a lot of stress, and you were trying to explain that to me. But I would have kept right on doing it if you hadn't been so persistent about, look, if you really want the results that you're looking for, you're going to have to take it a notch down and basically get your body a chance to recover. And that was so hard to hear. But, you know, I couldn't take it after you had said all those things and then take credit and say, well, look what I did. There's no way I could use the I statement when you had basically put so much into me about, you know, being a better and healthier. And that was kind of funny when you were saying that. You know, you could be healthier if you did less this. You know, because I don't think people understand about the classes that we're talking about, but they're hour-long classes of basically just hardcore complex cardio. It's more like a HIIT training.
So it
was a lot going on in that class for an hour. You know, not like somebody going steady state or, you know, sitting on a bike for an hour. Yeah, you were basically saying, look, you're doing enough. And if you need to tone it down with the way you're working your body, because sooner or later something's got to give. And I think that's what really broke into my psyche is when you said that, you know, something's got to give. And I, you know, I could think about all my family members that have just pushed and pushed and pushed and then pushed too far and then something went wrong. And I said, I don't want to be that person. So that was the wake-up call for me. But there was no way I could sit there and take everything you had said and then try to claim it as my own because it wasn't. I mean, it was so foreign to me. It was like a different language, and I'll be honest about that.
Well, I wish I could take all the credit, but, I stand on the shoulders of those people that did the research. I just did my job to make sure I knew what those people had found out. And give everybody that I trained, or people like you that I mentored or would take my advice. So they gave me the knowledge. I just worked at putting the knowledge in my head so I could give it to people like you.
Well, it definitely works. And I do pray that the natural community learns more to be about giving back the way it was given, because no one stands alone. And they might like to think it, you know, we like to puff our chest out and say, I. But it's very seldom I did anything. It's so many people that are tied to you. You know, I can't imagine what my bodybuilding career would be if I hadn't had Denny in my life, meaning you. It was just that much to where I really can't see even having that passion. Because, you know, I was so driven on the cardio side. Weights were just second nature, because this is something you did to stay in shape. But the cardio is what I thought would really, you know, bring it home. And basically, I was doing more damage to my muscle than I had ever meant.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, again, just what I got back from you, just our friendship, the close relationship we developed over the years. That's something you can't buy. You know, that means a lot to me.
Yes,
and
sir.
It's a special part of why I love this job.
It's a special part of why
like
we love you.
You know, the different clients I've had that had, you know, various problems. They thought they'd never be able to walk again, or they thought they'd never be able to get up off the toilet. You know, simple things like that we take for granted. So it's a job I love. It's a job I'm passionate about. It's a job I'm going to do until I fall over dead.
Well, I guarantee that's going to be a long time from now, because you've definitely taken great care of your body. And Denny, I thank you so much for being on the show, but I have to say these things so people can understand. You know, I've seen bodybuilding on both sides, and, you know, of course I don't care for the enhanced version, because, like you said, it's not about health, and if I'm about health, then I have to go against that, and that's just the nature of the beast. But the fact that there's people like you that can walk into someone's life and basically change everything about it, where I could see the benefits of everything that I wanted to do. I mean, because, you know, like you said, if you're talking about steroids, that's a world I don't know or understand. That's just what it is. And then you see that, you know, you can still have a certain look and physique without it. And then to find out that this is what they wanted to look like in the beginning anyway.
Right. And you live a lot longer.
And a lot healthier.
A lot healthier, yeah.
Well, Denny, before we end the show, other than your wife, your wonderful wife, do you have any shout-outs you want to give to anyone?
Well, I got my daughter in Florida. She does a different kind of. She was a dancer when she was younger, and she got back into a type of exercise they call barre, which uses a lot of ballet-type movements, you know. I got a son that's a musician. All my clients that I love dearly, from a 93-year-old, you know, my mother, Melvis.
Yes.
You know her well. I just trained her today. One of the dearest people in my life. I don't call her mother lightly for not a good reason, because she is like my mother. And, And
it's
a close relationship I have with all my clients, just like I have with you.
Amen to that. Well, then
I don't call you son for no light reason either.
Yes, sir. I really appreciate all the time you've taken with me, and it's a true honor. I mean, I've been, you know, we've been trying to get this date set up, and I'm so glad it actually fell through. And you know, I thank God for you. I mean that too. From every part of my heart, every part. I really thank God for you because you've just been there, and you never had to be. And for me, that's, like you said, you can't put a price on that. You know, for you to take the time with your knowledge, with your background and with your experience, you know, just a gym rat, and you put your hand on his shoulder and say you matter just as much as any client I've ever had. That meant more than I can ever put into words. As much as I might try, it'll never come out the way I feel. And how you went about doing it, and I'm really saying this because I thank God for you. I really do.
Well, I feel the same way about you, Jay. You know that. That's why I call
yes,
you
sir.
My gym song.
Well, thanks, Denny. I know you got a wife to get home to, and thanks so much for taking time out of your day, because I know I was cutting you in between clients and getting home, and you still find a way to make the time for me. So thank you so much. Have a blessed
You're
rest
welcome.
Of your day, and have a great, you know, I'll see you tomorrow, and we'll chat, but thanks so much for everything.
You're welcome. I love you, Kay.
Love you too, Denny. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Personal training. We talk about personal trainers, and we forget about people like that. And it's amazing to what big box gyms are doing with personal training, where they're basically making them into salesmen, when you have people like that, like Denny, that can make so much of a difference in someone's life to actually create a life where they can actually become better again. Because the one thing that I learned, and Denny has been through my accident with me as far as the rehab, and is you don't know. And you say, what if, and maybe, and doubt creeps in, and fear creeps in. And then you have someone like that that can basically walk you through all those aspects. And we don't really understand what personal training is until you meet a genuine soul that really knows the business. He's not giving you the business. He knows the business. He lives the business. He breathes the business. I mean, this man didn't know me from Adam, but he was bringing me documentation to substantiate every word he had, everything he was telling me, and that all I had to do was read it. He would Xerox copies from his studies, from his books in college, because he still goes to college. He's still wanting to learn, and he's going to learn because he knows that's what makes him the person he is. And he still takes that time to Xerox those things and hand them to me so I'll be enlightened just like he is. You don't put a price on people like that, and you don't take credit for what they've done for you, and I never will. He's just a golden individual, and I just love him to death. And hopefully, you know, the listeners tonight will figure out that, you know, we don't do anything on our own. There's plenty of support that we basically take it for granted so much that we don't even consider them when it's time to get the accolades that we cherish from others. So please just consider, just think back to all the individuals that took the time that they didn't need to give. They didn't have to give. It was their choice. You make the choice now to be a better person because you understand so many people make you. That's all I got to say. Kalen Patterson, Midwest Thoughts of P4P Real Talk in the house, and we are